And today is Tuesday, June 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, the latest from the U.S. southern border as the administration says it will shelter children away from a Texas facility at the center of a media firestorm. And the United States and Iran continue their back and forth as tensions continue to rise.
They should give up their pursuit of deliverable nuclear weapons. They should make that strategic decision. They haven't done it yet.
Plus, France prepares for a heat wave as the 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup rolls towards the finals. These stories and more are ahead on today's International Edition. Several hundred children held in a U.S. border detention facility in Texas after entering the country without authorization will be sheltered elsewhere. That news following a media report last week that described unsanitary living conditions and inadequate food and medical treatment at the facility. Now, to provide a full picture, I'm now joined by VOA immigration reporter Victoria Maki. Victoria, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So I was wondering if you could briefly break down what was reported last week about these detention facilities in Texas.
Sure. So there was an Associated Press report late last week detailing some pretty grim circumstances. Now, a lot of these shelters along the border are really running over capacity. What they described in the report was really unsanitary conditions, sick kids. Some had been quarantined with the flu. A couple of kids told lawyers and others who were visiting them that they had been given rotten food. They weren't being provided with kind of basic hygiene things like toothbrushes. So pretty awful conditions for some kids to be in.
You mentioned that these reports say that the facilities were over capacity. I know the government has conducted its own inquiry into these facilities. How does that reporting reflect what's being reported in the AP article?
So here's the issue. The government is definitely dealing with a lot of kids on the border. Between the number of families that have been apprehended and the number of unaccompanied kids, both those numbers we're seeing at really high levels, unprecedented in some cases. The issue is that the children are being held in Border Patrol facilities for more than 72 hours. Now, unless there are extraordinary circumstances, these kids are supposed to be transferred to another agency within 3 days, an agency that is better equipped to care for kids, which is the Office of Refugee Resettlement. Why these kids aren't being transferred faster, that remains unclear.
Has the administration given any kind of inkling as to what the delay is about?
No, they haven't. The issue is, so OR, the Office of Refugee Resettlement, is taking some of the kids that were in that facility that was raised, that the issues were raised at last week, but not all of them. So some of the kids who were in that facility will remain there. And all of this is happening at a time, I'm seeing initial media reports that the head of Customs and Border Protection may be resigning shortly. So the story is literally changing by the hour. What's going to happen by the end of the day, we don't even know.
We are coming up on an election cycle, both congressional as well as a presidential election in 2020. What has been the response up on the Hill to these reports?
Well, obviously, no lawmaker is going to come forward and say that kids should be in these conditions. I think everyone on the Hill basically agrees that these are not great conditions. Who's responsible for them is what it comes down to. And there's a lot of finger pointing in Washington these days over ultimately whose responsibility this is. Is the responsibility with Congress to get more funding to the border agency? Is it with the border agency itself and how it's handling the situation? Nobody wants to own up to what's actually happening.
So what is the next step in terms of what can be done to safeguard these children's welfare?
Well, the bottom line is, I think that we're at a period of very, very high scrutiny over how these kids are being treated. I think there will be a concerted effort to get them out of the border facilities faster. That's going to mean a lot more effort from the other agencies involved to get these kids, whether it's into foster care or other, you know, other shelters that are bigger, more spacious, and can actually take care of these kids. But everyone is sort of strapped on the border right now, wondering what to do. I mean, I've seen, you know, these agencies literally buying thousands of bottles and diapers, just trying to keep up with the demand.
That's disheartening. Victoria Maki reports on VOA's immigration desk. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Iran's president has mocked U.S. President Donald Trump in response to new sanctions that the White House imposed on Monday. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma has more.
Iran has sharply criticized new U.S. sanctions targeting the Islamic Republic's supreme leader and other top officials, saying the measures spell the permanent closure for diplomacy between the two nations. For his part, Iran's president, Hassan Rouhani, has described the White House as afflicted by mental retardation. Rouhani went on to call the sanctions against the nation's supreme leader as outrageous and idiotic. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Meanwhile, in Israel, U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton said Iran was still dangerous.
The threat of a nuclear Iran is very real, as are the threats of Iran's support for terrorism, its ballistic missile program, and its other malign activities in the Middle East.
He added that Iran should not violate the terms of the 2015 nuclear deal Tehran signed with world leaders, but the Trump administration withdrew from.
They should give up their pursuit of deliverable nuclear weapons. They should make that strategic decision. They haven't done it yet.
Ultimately, Bolton says all options remain on the table if Iran exceeds the uranium enrichment limit under that 2015 deal.
As we understand it from European foreign ministries, their view would be that it would be a very serious mistake for Iran to ignore those limits.
Yesterday, Iran's United Nations ambassador, Majid Takht Ravanchi, called the situation very dangerous.
The U.S. decision today to impose more sanctions against Iran is yet another indication of continued U.S. hostility against the Iranian people and their leaders, and that the U.S. has no respect for international law and order, as well as the views of overwhelming majority of the international community. To ease tensions in the broader Persian Gulf region, the U.S. must stop its military adventurism in our region, as well as its economic war and terrorism against the Iranian people.
And the ambassador also added,
we want neither war nor an escalation of tension in the Persian Gulf region. But certain circles from inside and outside of the region, through dangerous acts, are attempting to escalate the tensions.
Ravanchi said U.S.-Iran talks are impossible under current conditions, saying that you cannot start a dialogue with someone who is threatening, who is intimidating you. Here are other major stories from around the globe. Four Chinese nationals are charged in the deadly collapse of a building in Cambodia. Former NBA star Dikembe Mutombo joins the fight against Ebola in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Ethiopia observes a national day of mourning as questions remain about what the prime minister's office calls an attempted coup in the Amhara region. And murdered Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi's fiancé is urging UN Human Rights Council to investigate his killing after a new report concluded Saudi Arabia is responsible. For these stories and more, you can go to our website, voanews.com, or download and take the stories with you with our mobile app. This is VOA's International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
A recent study led by Columbia University's Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory provides evidence that a huge freshwater aquifer lies beneath the Atlantic Ocean just off the northeast coast of the United States. The study, published in the journal Nature Scientific Reports, suggests that the mostly freshwater supply is being held in porous sediments that lie below the ocean. The study authors say that the aquifer appears to be the largest found in the world so far, and that it extends about 80 kilometers from shore in Massachusetts down to at least New Jersey. The study suggests that the fresh water was fed to the aquifer from melting glacial ice about 15,000 to 20,000 years ago. The researchers noted that if the aquifer were found on the surface, it would create a lake covering some 39,000 square kilometers. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. NATO urged Russia today to destroy a new missile before an August deadline and save a treaty that keeps land-based nuclear warheads out of Europe or face a more determined alliance response in the region. VOA's Jeff Custer has more.
Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg and NATO defense ministers will discuss Wednesday their next steps if Moscow maintains the missile system that the United States says allows short-notice nuclear attacks on Europe and breaks the 1987 Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, or INF.
We call on Russia to take the responsible path. But unfortunately, we have seen no indication that Russia intends to do so. In fact, it continues to develop and field the new missiles. And there are just 5 weeks left for Russia to save the treaty. So tomorrow we will decide on NATO's next steps in the event Russia does not comply.
Russia warned this week of a standoff comparable to the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis if the United States were to deploy land-based missile systems near Russia's borders. But Stoltenberg said there were no plans to undertake a new arms race.
Our response will be defensive, measured, and coordinated. We will not mirror what Russia does. We do not intend to deploy new land-based nuclear missiles in Europe. We do not want a new arms race. But as Russia is deploying new missiles, we must ensure that our deterrence and defense remains credible and effective. This is NATO's job.
The INF Treaty, negotiated by then-President Ronald Reagan and Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev and ratified by the U.S. Senate, eliminated the medium-range missile arsenals of the world's two biggest nuclear powers and reduced their ability to launch a nuclear strike at short notice. Without a deal, the United States will withdraw from the INF Treaty on August 2nd, removing constraints on its ability to develop its own nuclear-capable medium-range missiles. Jeff Custer, VOA News.
Boris Johnson, the favorite to become British Prime Minister, said he was prepared to lead Britain out of the European Union without a deal on October 31st and said any EU attempt to impose trade tariffs would be akin to a Napoleonic-era blockade. The United Kingdom's three-year Brexit crisis could be about to deepen as Johnson's pledge to leave the EU with or without a deal on Halloween could provoke a standoff with Parliament, which has indicated its opposition to a no-deal exit. A no-deal scenario means there would be no transition period, so the exit would be abrupt, the nightmare scenario for many businesses and leaders, and the dream of hard Brexiteers who want a decisive split. Johnson, a former foreign minister and London mayor, said he was convinced the EU would agree a new deal based on bits of outgoing Prime Minister Theresa May's dead withdrawal agreement, but that Britain has to demonstrate
a plan that will convince our European friends and partners that we are absolutely serious about coming out. And the key things that you've got to do are to take the bits of the current withdrawal agreement, which is dead, take the bits that are serviceable and get them done, because you're going to need some kind of agreement, and that's certainly what I'm aiming for. Nobody wants a hard border in Northern Ireland, and indeed nobody believes that it will be necessary. There are abundant technical fixes that can be introduced to make sure that you don't have to have checks at the border.
Johnson reaffirmed his view, contested by many, that Britain could retain tariff-free trade with the EU after a no-deal Brexit. Johnson told LBC Radio if the EU decided to impose tariffs on goods coming from the UK, it would be a return to Napoleon's continental system, which was a blockade to cripple Britain's economy during the Napoleonic Wars in the early 19th century. Bank of England Governor Mark Carney has said a provision that permits trade to continue unchanged between two parties if they so decide could only be applied when a trade deal was in place or about to be in place. Johnson repeated a warning that there would be a creative ambiguity about when and how a previously agreed $50 billion exit bill gets paid to the EU. Much of Western Europe is sweltering as a record heat wave blankets the continent. Temperatures are expected to exceed 40 degrees centigrade in France and Germany this week, with record highs expected throughout Europe. In France, where the FIFA Women's World Cup is underway, the government is issuing health warnings about surviving the heat. Paris-based journalist Catherine Field says French officials remember a deadly heat wave in 2003 and want to prevent problems. She spoke with my colleague Kate Pound Dawson.
Well, at the moment in central France, we're looking at temperatures of between 35 and 39 degrees centigrade. That's expected to go up to 40 by Thursday and Friday. But because of the high humidity, authorities are saying expect it to get up to around 47 degrees centigrade. It'll feel like 47 degrees centigrade.
Now, how unusual is that?
Well, it's incredibly unusual. The last time it was this hot at this time of year was in the 1940s. So this is really hot. The last time we had temperatures around this height was back in 2003. There was a heat wave, but that was in August. It was much further into the summer, so it wasn't so much of a surprise. But you have to remember that back then in 2003, there were 15,000 deaths in France related to that heat wave. And so that's why authorities are now trying to take this seriously and coming out with health announcements on TV and radio. And the basic line that they're pushing to people is, nobody is Superman. Don't think that you can ride this out.
Well, let's get into how Europeans are coping. How are people cooling down? There isn't a lot of air conditioning in homes and in some offices and schools even.
Indeed. On the one hand, you've got the authorities have told children and older people to stay indoors. You've also had the almost unknown case here in France of the Ministry of Education actually postponing intermediate school leaving exams by a week. This is something that everyone thought could never happen in France, but they've done that. That was due to be held this Thursday and Friday. What they have done, in fact, since that 2003 heat wave is that officials have set up so-called cool rooms in municipal buildings. So they've got rooms that have got air conditioning in them, that have got spaces for several dozen people. As well as that, in old people's homes, they also have to have a designated cool room, so there is somewhere for people to go. But the main point is, if you're not in that category of children or old people, if you're someone who still has to go to work, it's really tough. So you've got places in different squares right across France, from Paris right through to Lyon, Nice, Marseille in the south, where authorities have just set up water sprays, showers in the town centres where people can just walk through. That's all they're saying they can do, as well as wear light clothes, stay in the shade, and keep drinking water.
At this point, have there been any deaths or hospitalizations from heat reported?
Not that we know so far. This is the other thing that we are being reminded of from that 2003 heat wave, is that people weren't checking up on their elder relatives or people who are living out in the countryside so often. So even though I say for the moment we don't know anything, but authorities do worry that there are not enough checks in place, either from families or social services, to go and see if people who are living on their own are okay.
And that was Paris-based journalist Catherine Field speaking with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson. And you're listening to VOA's International Edition.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, how long can a head of state maintain effective leadership? Some African leaders are forced out of office, while others respect the political process. The politics of transition on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller. Australia has rescued the children and grandchildren of two dead Islamic State fighters from a Syrian refugee camp. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison said they could not be held responsible for the crimes of their parents. Phil Mercer is reporting from Sydney and has more.
For the three surviving children of the notorious Australian militant Khaled Sharouf, the nightmare of Syria is over. They're now reported to be in Iraq and will be resettled in Australia within weeks. They're said to be traumatised and in poor health. One has bullet wounds to her legs, while another, who's still a teenager, is expecting her third child. She was forced by her father to marry a jihadist when she was 13. Sharouf took his family from Sydney to the Middle East in 2014. He made headlines around the world when he posed for a photograph in the city of Raqqa with his young son, who was holding a severed head. It's thought Sharouf was killed in an airstrike 2 years ago. He'd previously been jailed in Australia for terrorism offences and released in 2009. His Australian wife, Tara Nettleton, a convert to Islam, reportedly died of medical complications in Syria in 2015. The Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison says the couple's children deserve a fresh start.
I mean, the fact that you would take a child and put them in a conflict zone like this is despicable, and I find it disgusting. But the children can't be held responsible for that.
The children aged between 2 and 18 were removed from a camp in northern Syria by an aid agency working with Australia. The group includes three orphans of another Australian militant, Yasin Rizvik. The rescue mission was the first of its kind by a Western government. Concerns over security in Syria have so far deterred other countries, including Britain, Germany and the United States. A lawyer representing Khaled Sharouf's children said that some Australians wouldn't welcome them home because of their family ties to extremism. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
SpaceX's Falcon Heavy rocket has conducted one of its toughest missions yet, launching no fewer than 24 satellites in a single go. Reuters' Julian Satterthwaite reports.
3, 2, 1, 0.
The latest SpaceX mission blasted off in the early hours of Tuesday. Elon Musk's company says it's among the most difficult yet. The Falcon Heavy rocket carried no fewer than 24 satellites. Its nighttime mission is easier to make out in this animation from SpaceX. Customers included the Department of Defense, NASA, and universities. It took three separate orbits to deploy all the satellites. Probably the most unusual payload is a light sail. The crowd-funded project aims to be the first spacecraft in Earth orbit propelled solely by sunlight. If successful, it could be used to maneuver future satellites without use of rockets. As for SpaceX, this is the third launch for its Falcon Heavy. The rocket's two boosters return safely to the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. Though the central core section did not pull off this return to a sea landing pad, it crashed into the Atlantic instead. SpaceX claims the rocket is by far the most powerful in the world, able to loft 64 tons into orbit. Being partially reusable cuts the cost of launches. But Musk is working on something much bigger to help realize his vision of missions to Mars.
And that was reporter Julian Satterthwaite. And that's going to do it for us today. On behalf of our director, Nadia Taha, and engineer, Nashwan Kale, thank you so much for joining us. Now, for pictures, videos, stories, and more, be sure to follow VOA on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, with the VOA mobile app, you can download and take the stories with you. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a terrific Tuesday.